Blog Talk Radio.
Check it out online at fitnessbuffshow.com and start getting fitter and faster today. In the 1970s, my dad never made any purchase of substance without consulting Consumer Reports. Vacuum cleaners, toaster ovens, window air conditioners, used cars, he never made a move without CR. In those pre-internet days, he collected the magazine's back issues the way I collected comic books. I just kept my comics a lot neater and more organized than he did his magazines. Today's Consumer Reports is very different from the one my dad admired, thanks to the internet. There are a whole host of websites and services competing to provide consumer information in what used to be a niche owned solely by Consumer Reports. Consumers now have instant, free access to consumer-written product performance reviews from Amazon.com to ePinions and everywhere in between. In the wired world, it seems, everybody has an opinion and wants to share it. We'll talk about that today with my guest, Kim Kleeman. Kim is the new editor of Consumer Reports, the flagship publication of Consumers Union. She's also an old acquaintance whom I worked with at the Tampa Tribune 20 years ago, and whom my wife worked with at the St. Petersburg Times. Kim joined Consumer Reports in 1997 and has since been managing editor, deputy editor, and special assignments editor, shepherding award-winning investigative projects. Earlier this year, Kim was promoted to editor-in-chief. Kim, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm delighted to talk to you. It's been a while. And I'm going to ask right up. I'm sure you were very proud to be promoted to editor-in-chief at the magazine, but I suspect you and everyone else wish it were under better circumstances this year.
Well, you know, it is a huge honor to work here. I have fun, you know, every day that I come to work. And you're referring to the problem we had with our infant car seat testing. I'm happy to say that I feel like we've learned significant lessons from that experience. We are moving on, and we have exciting projects ahead of us. So, you know, we take it very seriously. The last several months have been a period of intense introspection and, you know, communication with our readers as to, okay, here's what went wrong, here's what we're doing about it, and onward and upward.
It's very unusual over the years to hear anything bad reported about Consumer Reports. So when this happened, it had to be a cultural shock for people in the institution as well as people who read it. Can you, I hate to put these through this, but can you just take a minute and kind of review for people what happened with the child safety seats?
Yeah. We test child safety seats periodically. And to do that, we use an outside laboratory which has specialized test equipment that we don't have here on site. And I would say that of all the testing we do, maybe about 10% of our tests involve outside labs, again, for specialized testing equipment or outside expertise that we don't have internally. That said, we take responsibility for everything that we test, either in-house or outside. With child safety seats, we attempted testing that went above and beyond the government standard. There was a severe miscommunication between our testers and the lab we used, and that resulted in a mistake. We tested, we crash tested car seats at speeds that far exceeded what we thought we were testing. The lessons that we learned from our mistake are that when we're attempting new testing, we want to do more research and bring in a lot of outside experts to help us craft the new tests. You know, that is what we plan on doing. the thought was that maybe we were too insular with that test. You know, we have a long history of crash testing car seats, not the kind of testing that we tried this time, a side impact test. So moving forward, we will be involving more experts to help us when we're testing your products in a new way.
So this was different testing than had been done previously.
Right.
And was
we were attempting a side impact crash test, which we had not attempted before with child seats. The government was charged with pursuing this kind of test years ago and hadn't done anything about it. So I think the intent was honest and right, but the results, unfortunately, were not what we wanted.
And did CR test at a higher rate of speed?
We thought we were testing a side impact at 38 miles an hour. It turned out that the crash speed was roughly double that.
Oh my God. So
that invalidated our car seat test. I do have to say that, you know, as soon as we found out, you know, that there was a mistake, we pulled down the story from our website. The president wrote a letter that we sent to the 7 or 8 million subscribers we have to both the magazine and the website and our other publications. We wrote a story in the magazine about what went wrong, and we have done many interviews, you know, talking to the press about what happened as well. The result is that we did not have subscribers leaving us in droves. We saw, you know, not even a blip, not even a dip in subscriberships. And I'm very happy to say that I think our readers know that we normally don't make mistakes, and that we're very sorry about this, and that we learned from what we did. So there hasn't been a lot of fallout, I'm happy to say.
Now, you and I have been with some large institutional publications over the years, and there tends to be a bit of reluctance, initial reluctance, stubbornness, institutional stubbornness at first. When someone catches a mistake, there's some hesitation to acknowledge that. There was a little sense that Consumer Reports took a little while to acknowledge the mistake. On the other hand, with this kind of testing, I don't know how quickly you know, you can act on that without going back and checking everything. Is that safe to say?
Well, let me say that with us, there was no hesitation. You know, the government tried tests that we did, and as soon as the government said, hey, listen, we're not finding the results that you are, you know, we met with them, or we retested, and within a day we had pulled the story. So I would not say that there was hesitation on our part or, you know, yes, it's right, whatever. You know, if a manufacturer for any test project questions what we do, we gladly bring them into, you know, our headquarters here in Yonkers and show them, you know, the results of all the tests for their products. So we are very open to share, you know, how we tested and what the results are.
There was a particular manufacturer that was affected by this, wasn't there?
There were a few manufacturers. You know, there were several car seats for which we said, you know, these do not perform well in the tests that we did. You know, and there were some car seats. There were two car seats for which we asked for a recall. And you know, again, we are about to come out. We are in the process of retesting all the seats that we tested. So we're about to come out with new information as soon as we have check tested, you know, the current tests that we're doing.
See, I was going to ask you how long before the magazine would do another review of child safety seats, and that again, other publications would have this experience and would be like, they're not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. Consumer Reports has a slightly different obligation from its mission, right?
Yeah, our only constituents are consumers, and we feel that, you know, and Consumer Reports is all about product safety. So it's obviously imperative that whatever we do it right, but we cannot shy away from testing child safety seats or anything.
And are there particular editorial safeguards that have been put in place to try to prevent something like this happening again?
Well, you know, the way that we write stories and research reports here, we do everything as part of a team. You know, when we work together at our various newspapers, it's you know, the reporter and it's the editor, and you know, you often do your own check testing of the facts, and bam, it goes into the newspaper. Here, again, everything involves a team, such that there's a tester, a main tester, a project leader, and a technician, and there's a reporter, and there's an editor, and there might be a survey researcher, and there's a fact checker. So, you know, the safeguards that we've implemented affect, you know, the whole team and how the team works. And again, a lot of it is, you know, when we do new kinds of testing, okay, you know, what is everything we know out there about the kind of testing that already exists, and, you know, what experts should we call in to talk to us about, you know, the new way we're considering testing and all that kind of stuff. So that is the model that we're using, you know, to proceed.
How you were promoted to editor in chief not too long after all this kind of broke. How do you get back to the mission of the magazine after an incident like this and restore staff morale, which I'm sure must have been a little upended?
This experience caused so much soul searching for our organization. Of course, we took it hugely seriously, and I think the best way to move beyond something like this is to acknowledge the mistakes that we made, to be very clear about what we are doing such that this doesn't happen again, and to focus on the new work. Because, you know, as you said, we can't stop testing. We can't be afraid to test. But you know, we have to continue and do it right. So I feel good about where we are now in that, you know, we're moving on to, you know, all kinds of testing, and we're continuing with, you know, those kind of flagship tests for which we're known, and I feel that we're getting beyond it.
You'll be happy to know that we're beyond that topic now. Let me ask you about a different kind of testing, something that's really come into the public conscience the last couple of months, and that is tainted food from overseas, in particular China. Is that something that Consumer Reports can and will deal with, or is that beyond the scope of what you guys do?
No, it's absolutely something that we're dealing with. Let me say that several years ago, we put out a report called Hazard in Aisle 5 that took a look at imports, especially imports from China, and we didn't look at food specifically, although, as you noted, you know, that's clearly part of the mix now. But we were looking at the Consumer Product Safety Commission and what they spot check and what they're missing and why that's happening. We sent shoppers out throughout the country pulling products off dollar store shelves and discount store shelves that looked iffy, and brought them back to our labs and tested or otherwise examined them. And we found, I mean, my favorite item that we found in that investigation was Baby's First box cutters. The label, unbelievably, the label said, you know, not for children under 3 years old. But these were actual box cutters, one that was pink and one that was blue. And, you know, the question is, why is that stuff being sold? Were you going to say something?
Whose idea was children's box cutters?
I don't know. But all of which is to say, we've really been looking at the quality of products on the shelves for a long time, and, you know, we're definitely going to be continuing. I mean, the Consumer Product Safety Commission, it's been consumers' unions' judgment that, you know, that they are not asking for enough money to do the job that they need to do. You know, in a period, in an era where so many products are regulated by a kind of voluntary standard and not mandatory standards, And the Consumer Product Safety Commission's attitude is, oh, you know, it's a voluntary standard. You can't expect us to oversee everything. That's not good enough for consumers, and we're really seeing the fallout of that now.
Well, my sense of it is, and I'm curious for your opinion on this, is that the government has rules in place, but the government has chosen to turn a blind eye, not enforce. We're in an era. And I'm not going to mention political parties, but it seems like we're in an era where enforcing those rules is not all that important.
We have a situation, I can kind of understand the mentality that, you know, it's a lot easier to get people to abide by rules when they're part of making the rules. So when you get a bunch of manufacturers together and say, okay, what are the minimum standards that these products need to adhere to, that can be a friendlier way than saying, you will make them this way. But that said, we think, you know, in many cases, you know, we had a story recently about ladders that, you know, were not safe. You know, six or seven ladders that just failed federal standards. You know, we think that in many cases more is needed, and that's not happening. And you know, we think that the Consumer Product Safety Commission needs to be more of a watchdog.
Do you think that's going to happen anytime soon?
I'm not optimistic.
Yeah. Kim, you're a woman with excellent investigative reporting credentials, editing credentials. What makes Consumer Reports the right place for you?
I love Consumer Reports for a number of different reasons. The first is that our only constituent is the consumer. We have a very different model than most other magazines out there in that I don't have to worry about our advertisers. And Consumer Reports makes its own news, which is very exciting. The kinds of things that we're reporting about and that we find, you know, nobody else can tell people, such as, you know, we just did a story in our August issue, a big package about kitchens. And you'd think, you know, okay, well, what can be exciting about, you know, testing dishwashers and ranges and that kind of thing? But, you know, once again, we found that those pricey brands that cost you, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars for the she name are actually worse performers than something that can save you, you know, hundreds of dollars. That's kind of a classic Consumer Report story. And it's something that we can tell people. We can tell people not only what to buy, but what not to buy and why you don't want to buy this kind or this brand. And I think that's hugely empowering to people. You know, Consumer Reports, what I want to do as editor is elevate, you know, service journalism even higher. That's what we are all about here. I think it's a very noble calling. I think, you know, journalists kind of look at service journalism as, maybe that's where you start out to cut your teeth. But I want to move on to, you know, something bigger and better. But there are great stories in service journalism, especially as we conceive it here, which is, you know, what is happening right, what is happening wrong, why this stuff should be off the shelf, and that kind of thing. So all of that is why I'm really excited to be here. I can segue into, you know, some of the things that I want to do as the new editor here, one of which includes telling people a little bit more about how we test, because it is very different than other publications. It's not kind of quickly eyeballing a digital camera or, you know, a kitchen appliance and, yeah, this one looks good. It's you know, dozens and hundreds of tests per model. It's, you know, staining countertops and flooring material with tar and ballpoint pen, and, you know, it's just great testing to let you know, what really holds up and what doesn't. Increasingly, I mean, we've always had a survey research component to, you know, whatever we do. You know, people talk about community as it applies to the web, and that's that's kind of the new terminology out there when it comes to the web. But we've been doing that in the magazine for decades and decades. We send out an annual questionnaire that is second most in size only to the U.S. Census, where we get information year after year. You know, what do you own, Mr. Andelman? And, you know, has it needed a major repair lately? And when did you buy it? So we have this incredible stockpile of reliability information on product by product, and it's able, you know, that kind of information allows us to say this brand is going to be good for you, and this brand has been really iffy, especially in the last several years, and what's going on with this brand? Stay away from, you know, these guys. So it's my job as editor to bring to the fore our testing, our survey research work, great service journalism. And, you know, in all of that, you know, investigative reporting. We have a history of that. I think we need to continue that in a big way.
Is there new ground or new journalistic techniques, for example, to be covered or exploited by the magazine in doing this?
Well, I mean, every one of our best stories, I think, involves a significant investigative reporting component, a significant testing component, and a survey component. And when we can combine the three, it's just a home run. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, but what we like to do is employ all of our kind of powerhouses of information for our reports. That said, I mean, that's hard for a lot of publications to copy, because there's a certain way you have to test stuff in order for it to be credible and valid. So, you know, it's a model that works very well for us because we're fortunate enough to have the resources. You know, I'm not sure everybody could replicate that.
Newspapers and magazines, but newspapers are cutting back like crazy. They're cutting back their arts coverage. It's starting to bleed over into investigative reporting. As such, what's the environment like for that type for investigative reporting at Consumer Reports? Are you picking up staff? Are you finding that skilled investigative reporters who might not have been interested in service in the past are coming around saying, you know, maybe I ought to give this a try?
Let me say that we seem to be zigging when everybody else is zagging. Our subscriptions have been increasing. We have doubled our newsstand sales in the past 3 years. We are hiring people. We have a magazine that's fifth or sixth largest in the nation with 4.3 million subscribers. We have the world's largest paid subscription website, which will hit 3 million paid subscribers this fall. So, and our books are flourishing. We launched a new magazine called Shop Smart for people, you know, on the go who maybe don't have time to pour through all the ratings, want, you know, the best three or whatever. So that tells me that we're doing something right, and that the unique information we have, people want. So I guess my first charge as editor is not to blow it.
Don't blow it. Don't blow it. What are the hot new products drawing the magazine's attention? And is it too soon to ask if you guys have taken a hard look at the iPhone yet?
Well, you know, we had in one of our latest issues our first look on the iPhone, and you'll see that online as well. But we're doing, we're doing ongoing testing of the iPhone to address, you know, the battery issues that have, you know, come to light. And, you know, our first evaluation of the iPhone included the fact that as a phone, you know, we're not hugely impressed. So, we're hearing what readers are saying, and incorporating some of that information into our testing. It's helping us to inform. Oh, let's look at this. Let's look at that. Yeah.
Are there other products or categories of the moment that are drawing, you know, your attention?
The way that we have organized our staff, our editorial staff, is into five franchises that are our biggest coverage areas. So we have a staff that is always testing cars, obviously, one of our hugest bread and butter franchises. We have the home franchise that covers more than 100 different appliances and other products, including yard products, mowers, tractors, string trimmers. We have our finance franchise that oversees shopping and money and other personal finance issues, including a lot of surveys on best places to buy electronics or, the fact that, just forego the extended warranty based on our extensive survey of what breaks and when. So that's a finance franchise. We have a health franchise that covers everything from, exercise equipment to multivitamins and, big issues of health care and what's going on in the nation. And lastly, we have our electronics franchise, TVs, digital cameras, cell phones, and all the rest. So you ask what's hot. There are products within those franchises that we test on a continual basis. And the magazine takes a snapshot of those tests when it's, during kind of peak buying seasons, and the web has those ongoing tests as well, such that whenever your refrigerator happens to break and you need something now, you go to our website and there's up-to-date information.
Hmm. Now, it's interesting because you mentioned that both the website and the print version are growing, which is kind of an anomaly these days. Most publications, it seems their website is growing and their print is either static or dropping. Where do you think the balance will be between the two, let's say, in 5 years?
It's interesting that you would think that there would be maybe more people who are dual subscribers. We're finding that of the 4.3 million print subscribers and the 2.8 web subscribers, we have about a 500,000 overlap. 500,000 people take both the print and the web subscriptions. These products especially are kind of growing into their own. The web is for pure researchers. As I mentioned, the refrigerator broke last night. Help me get a new one today. Just the facts, that kind of thing. The magazine has to offer the complete buying experience for somebody who is in the market for a product, but it also has to be a good read, in my opinion, and it has to offer a good complement of a good mix. We have to offer enough information about big-ticket products. If somebody's in the market for a car or a lawnmower or some major appliance, but we also have to offer supermarket products, things that everybody wants. We have to offer information for people who might already have the big appliance but need to know how to keep it clean or how to keep it running properly, that kind of thing. And we have to offer really good, investigative reports, things that you go to a magazine to read and not necessarily the web. So what we're hoping to do, we think that that the products now are different. There is unique content that goes to the web first or the web only, likewise with the magazine. Increasingly, we will distinguish those products so that, they're increasingly a different experience.
Well, Kim, finally, let's look ahead for you. You've done newspapers. You've been at the magazine. Obviously, you're just at the beginning of your stint as editor-in-chief there. But 5 years from now, where will you be? What other kind of things do you want to do?
Well, I want to be employed. That's my first goal. I want to do this job. I want to do this job right. I am not thinking about the next job. Right now, I've been in this position about 3 months. I am looking to make this magazine, the best read that it can be, just the absolute premier testing and research publication and consumer journalism publication it can be. So I am very happy now. I think I could probably end my career 25 years from now in this position and be wildly happy. And I just hope that our subscribers are happy with me and my boss is happy. So I hope to see myself here because I've never had a job that I've loved so much.
Oh, that's great. Well, Kim, thank you so much for joining us today on Mr. Media.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really enjoyed talking to you.
Excellent. I appreciate that. Folks, if you'd like to keep up with Mr. Media's Friday interviews, you can subscribe to the site via email at www.mrmedia.com. You can also subscribe to the audio feed in the podcast section of iTunes. Thanks for joining us. Please come back next week for another Fridays with Mr. Media.